to the big show. This is the show on the British Tech Network which discusses an awful lot of tech that's big in the week, not necessarily from a point of knowledge, but certainly from a point of enthusiasm. And while I'm on the subject of enthusiasts, we've been talking about enthusiastic pursuits before we started.
Boy, Harry.
And I've got a pun. I was nearly going to say the obvious pun there. Of, and joining me is this bunch of wankers, but I've refrained. Top left, righty. How you doing, boy?
Hello, mate. How are you?
Fantastic, mate. What's been going off?
Well, after last week, I can't look at a cup of tea and a biscuit in the same way again.
Just spat water all over my monitor, you bastard! Oh, it's never got off this early. Next to righty, you bastard, is Jeff Cabot. How you doing, boy?
I'm doing fine, and I'm feeling really bad about missing last week's show.
Oh, you got to listen, boy. You got to listen.
I'll have to go listen. Holy crap. Wow. Kind of makes me feel bad that I skipped out so I could go to CES, because I missed out on the whole cup of tea and biscuit thing.
Appropriate that statement is until you've listened to the episode, mate.
I can't wait.
You'll be single afterwards.
It sounded completely inappropriate because me not knowing exactly what happened and then saying that, it had to add to the awesomeness for everyone.
And next to him is Rich.
Hello. I can't top that. Good to be back. Thank you for having me back.
You're welcome, mate. Dr. Proc is in the house.
Yeah, I'm not going to find a word that rhymes with that. No chance.
No, you've got to find a word that rhymes with Gloucester.
I can't find a word that rhymes.
There's got to be a piece of your anatomy that rhymes with Gloucester. Come on, chat room.
Yeah, if anyone in the chat room could do it, good luck to you, but I can't think of one.
Yeah, we'll have a writing competition. Proc. Sorry?
I know one that rhymes with Proc.
No, but that doesn't work.
I know, but I'm just contributing.
That is not the anatomical name for it.
It's not Dr. Sexy Batman. Dr. Procto went to, and we need a piece of anatomy that rhymes with Gloucester. So, next, we know we haven't asked how anyone is. We don't really actually give a shit. Paul Wheatley, how the hell are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I've got two bleeps to get out already this week. I feel like you.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
What's been happening in the borders, mate? Done anything interesting this week?
I've done a couple of things interesting, yes.
What have you done this week?
Sorry?
What have you done this week?
A variety of different things. I went to work. I booked some tickets to go to the NFL in London next year. There was a minor little thing about kind of booking mackerel.
Oh, we're going to Macworld. Me and Wheatley are going to hold hands at Macworld.
We're going to skip through the San Francisco daisies. It'll be lovely.
We are. If there's one city in the world where holding hands with two blokes is going to be okay, it's going to be there.
It will be awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
And last but by no means least, really, really, really struggling with the inappropriate content on this network. It's Carl Madden.
I was on last week, and I still don't know what tea and biscuit is a reference to.
Well, it's typical. You should have been listening. The week in tech. What's going on? No clue. Absolutely no frigging clue whatsoever. So, I'm going to ask this lot. Who brought the story then? Who wants to kick us off?
Should we do a Windows one?
Oh!
Oh, Windows. Oh.
Yes, because Windows XP, the old favourite. So Microsoft has said they're going to extend the virus warnings on poor old Windows XP to 2015. But it's only the warnings. They're not going to patch the bugs or anything like that anymore. But they're going to tell you they're out there. It's nice of them, isn't it?
I was just going to say, you have another virus.
Yeah.
Well, no, to be fair, Windows was a fairly secure platform in terms of viruses, wasn't it? I mean, as long as you kept... As long as you kept a third party service screening it,
and you didn't connect it to the internet at all.
I forgot about that bit as well. Yeah,
it didn't let people use it. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that bit too.
Keep it in the box without breaking the seal. It was fine.
I forgot that bit as well.
poor old Microsoft. Where the trouble is, XP shouldn't have lasted this long, but the Vista was such a maligned piece of software that no one wanted to upgrade, and then 7 came along, and then no one really trusted that. Although it's a great, there's nothing wrong with 7 at all. But loads of companies have invested lots of money into the XP, and that's why it's like 30% of PCs still running XP. Oh,
dude, not 90% of the organizations I go to every week are running XP. It is the de facto business software still.
Mm. Easily, yeah.
I mean, Richard, you're on NHS. That, if that doesn't boot up off a Windows XP or even NT or 2000, if it's NHS.
Do you know what? I'm actually impressed that a lot of them now are running on 7. So there you go.
7's rock solid.
It's not a bad system.
There was quite a few shitheads this week were suggesting that Microsoft are getting ready to walk away from Windows 8. Because it was such a failure. And I can't think of more bollocks that's been spoken
in
all my life.
Vista. Why are they going to walk away from 8?
Well, yes, good point. Why would you walk away from a perfectly good piece of software? But B, it is a perfectly good piece of software. 8, I've got 8 running on a machine down here. And it's stable. It's a rock-solid platform. Blue Screen of Death is a story you tell your kids when they won't go to sleep. Because it's not real anymore.
I'm running Windows 7 in my gaming rig, and I have absolutely no issues with that whatsoever.
Yep.
Yeah, rock solid.
That's the thing that gets me about the Mac morons, is that they always come out with this idea of blue screen of death. I have had more kernel panics I could count on my fingers and toes the number of kernel panics I've had on OS X. In comparison to the number of blue screens of death I've seen in the last 2 years.
I've had more crashes on iOS 7 than I've had at all.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Springboard restart, you mean? The Springboard restart.
Is that
where it just goes blank with the little logo and then it comes back onto the main screen?
No, for me, it's been going... completely black and then going back to the Apple logo and starting up all over again.
Yeah, that's common.
Yeah, I get that a lot too.
Mm. Yeah, it's meant to be a fix for that in 7.1, but you can't get here soon enough. But it's meant to be March.
Oh, the thing is as well that's annoyed me a little bit is up to Windows, to iOS 7, Windows 7, up to iOS 7, you had the double button press and you could hold on to the double button press until the white Apple logo appeared, and you knew you'd done a hard reset then. That's gone now. You hold the two buttons down, and it comes back to the standard boot screen, and that's it. And actually, when you start playing around, the issue that would have been resolved before with lagging or hanging or something like that still isn't resolved. It's iOS is not a great operating system at the moment, I would say.
Nope.
It is at times very frustrating.
I'm going to get hate mail for this. But you shouldn't be listening to the big show, should you, then? I think Carl's story about the XP support, I mean, there's lots of comments in the chat room here. Mac Jim says Microsoft are continue to support XP, but I don't think they're supporting the OS any longer, are they?
There's no more virus updates and like that, but I believe they did offer, like, corporations, if they're willing to pay X amount of money, they will continue to support them. But the general public... 8th of April 2014, everything gets cut off apart from these warnings.
Yeah. Well, the warning
is the same with 3.1. 3.1 technically only went out of complete use and complete support about 5 years ago, because it was still being used in, like, scarily airplanes and trains and things like that.
Well, I was working at a firm last year where they were running 3.11 on the trains.
Mm.
And I said to the guy, what do you do? Because they get brand new pieces of hardware in, which are good at sniffing the environment and that kind of stuff for contaminants and so on. And he said, I have to go home and write a driver. And he goes home at the weekends and he writes a driver for the new piece of hardware that they've got, because the new piece of hardware, the best thing that it'll support is XP.
Well, we find that all the time at work. We've got a lot of research equipment and kind of hardware that will only run on XP. And we've actually haven't now to kind of think ahead, because we're still going to have to run XP at the point that it kind of goes out of fashion. Because I think the updates they're talking about, I think they're talking about Security Essentials, which is their virus scanner. Is that the warning they're going to give? It's actually that bit of software, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think they backtracked on that as well, because that was going to be curtailed a lot worse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's only like this week they've kind of said, oh, actually, another Microsoft backtrack. We're actually going to extend it even further. But what's the point of a virus scanner with security warnings if you're not getting security updates? You know,
it's true.
It's not a lot of point, really. So,
but fair play to Microsoft. They did support it for 12.
Link to the Microsoft store.
Go on, Carl, say again.
I say fair play to Microsoft. They did support it for 12 years. I mean, they did keep it running over and, like, regular security patch, like Patch Tuesday and things like that.
I think it was a bit of an embarrassment to them that they had to support it for that period of time, because it was such a huge adoption and because Vista was such a piece of crap, although I never had any problems with Vista. Mm. But it is a shame that... it's a shame that they're trying to force people off it, I think, at the corporate level, because they're so embarrassed of the fact that XP is the operating system still.
But they actually supported it really well, because, you know, there were three service packs, which, you know, obviously made a kind of deployment in our environment really easy. And obviously we're still running Windows 7 at the moment, but there was only one service pack ever released. So once you install service pack one, there's another 300 updates after that to deploy. So it's a real pain in the arse.
Mm.
So XP is definitely the best supported bit of software they've probably ever released.
So if you if you're running XP now and you want to move across to 7 or 8 or whatever, how much are they charging for that?
That's a good question.
Isn't it still like 60, 80 quid, something like that? I haven't looked for cheap. Ages.
I think you're still better off buying an OEM disc or something like that, aren't you?
Why don't they just do... You know, do it like Apple and just charge 10 quid for it or something.
Because it's that's their revenue. And Microsoft, like Apple make hardware and they give you the software, but they used to charge for the software as well. Microsoft make their money from software. It's the OS primarily, it used to be primarily, but now it's probably Office they make more money from. But with like Google Docs and various other things constantly eroding that user base, so to speak, those profits are going down. And if they can't afford to give away their OS, because that's their primary...
That is their income.
Yeah.
There is no comparison.
8.1 was free, wasn't it, as a free upgrade?
No, that's a point upgrade. That's not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, all the service packs and point upgrades effectively to XP were...
To fix the broken product they sold.
Well...
Yeah, but they're saying this week that what would be Windows 8.2? They're going to rebrand as Windows 9 to get away from the embarrassment of Windows 8, aren't they?
Well, I think there is no embarrassment with Windows 8. I think that's a defamatory story that's been thrown around unfairly. I mean, I've got 7 running on my work laptop in Parallels in coherence mode. I get absolutely no issues, and it's constantly there. It's never been the cause of the problem. It's always been OS 10 that's the cause of the problem. To be fair, the chat room, back when she's making a point that she had problems with a CAD system, and got a blue screen of death, but that was due to bad RAM that was in there. So it was a hardware fault, not a software fault. And 8, I've never had any issues with it, and I've run it now for 8 months, and I've not had a single issue with 8 at all.
But what in Windows 8, do you primarily run the desktop?
Yeah, it's desktop and it's minor functionality. I've got a flight simulator program on there that I run as well. And I've also got stuff that I need to run for other customers, which is either web-based or Excel-based.
Because the problem we have is a lot of users have Windows 8 and they just want to run the desktop. But they open a photograph or run an app and it just goes into Metro full screen app and they just get fed up with it. I've installed Classic Shell so many times to give people a usable desktop. And like I say, oh, maybe Windows 8 is not an embarrassment for Microsoft, but for users, they're so confused because it's almost like two operating systems in one.
I think the other thing as well, going back to the Vista conversation, is, Princess Bagel in terms of saying Vista was unbelievably crap, but Fort says, I've got just the opposite. My office computer has been running Vista quite well for over 3 years and there's no issues. I never had a problem with Vista. Never had any problems at all with Vista. It ran beautifully.
But what the problem with Vista was, is the first edition, right out of the box, the day it was released, because Microsoft kept it so secret, they didn't do what they normally did and like share out all these updates as they were coming. Like Windows 7, developers had that. They had special builds years before it was actually released. Windows Vista, they kept quiet. They kept it all in-house. So people couldn't develop drivers and things for it.
Yeah, but they were a lot more open about Windows 8, weren't they? They kind of shared the development with everyone, didn't they?
I said, and the reason... See, they've had a problem as well. When they went from 7 to 8... You have, with an OS, because it's a fundamental, obviously it's a fundamental operating system, that's what makes the computer work. So they had to make it look, in this modern age, like you've bought an upgrade, because they're charging like 80, 90 quid, I think it was. And if they had just done another version of 7, from 7, with the same desktop, the same start button, people will start going to, start turning around and asking, well, why are we paying for this? What's different? What are you giving us different? Because it's only an OS.
Yeah, but do you think that the lifespan of Windows 7 was terribly short, wasn't it, compared to what's gone before? Isn't Windows 8 just a reaction to tablets and iPads and things like that?
Yeah, it's the touch. The touch generation came along, and now they had to offer something. And what was it, Steven Sanosky was the guy who pushed Windows 8?
I still keep coming back to this. I think that Apple have got to respond, because actually Windows 8 it might even have been a little bit too early. But if you look at the way that the Metro interface runs, in terms of the Windows Phone 7 and in terms of the Surface, it is beautiful. Because you're locating your cursor and you start typing if you've got an external keyboard. If you haven't got an external keyboard, I grant you, it's not the best experience in the world. So when you get up to the desktop level or laptop level, if you've got a touch-enabled laptop for locating of your cursor, and then you've got a keyboard that allows you to type, and you've got a mouse capability or touchpad capability, I think the Metro interface isn't that bad at all. I think it works really, really well. But if you're talking about on a desktop with a mouse, I can see that it's utterly frustrating if you've got no touchscreen. But in the next 5 years... it will be touch. You'll be zinging forwards and backwards from your user interface process. You won't be sitting there looking at just keyboard, just mouse, just screen. There'll be a homogenization of all of those, surely.
I've not played with it, but how does that differ between, say, for example, using an iPad paired with a Bluetooth keyboard?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. The interface that is Windows 8 is looking at laptops and eventually, desktops as they come more available with touchscreens, being touchscreen based. So you've got the best of both worlds. You sit and you go up to where you want, and then you sit down and you type, and then you go back up to where you want on the screen, and you can sit and draw stuff if you're talking about a Photoshop or a CAD system, and then you can go back to the screen and you can go to a mouse if you really want. You've got that. It's choices. It's choices, so, plain and simple. And I would love, if I had a Mac, I would love to open my laptop, and when I want to scroll the timeline in Final Cut, instead of having to sideswipe on my mouse, which I'm sure is giving me carpal tunnel syndrome, I could touch the screen and just pull it across to where I want it to be, and then down.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've located the cursor. But then I go back to my mouse or my trackpad or my keyboard.
It's actually... I was going to say, I actually quite enjoy using a Bluetooth keyboard with the iPad on a stand. Yeah. It's quite a nice way to work.
I think that's the way forward. And that's where I think this, if the 12.9-inch Pro is, that's where it's going to really hit the market, and that's where it'll get the real traction and benefit.
Mm. Yeah, because we get a load of Windows 8 laptops at work, and some are touch and some aren't. But the first thing I will probably go and do is go and reach my hand out and go and try and touch the screen, no matter what model I'm on, whether I know if it's touch or not. So it is an intuitive thing to do now, isn't it?
But even when I'm using my Mac, I'm fully aware that it's not my iPad. The amount of times that I kind of go to touch something on the screen or go to swipe something. It's silly. You want to do it. It's become natural.
My little daughter, Bryony, she, I nearly said the wrong name then. I said Carol because it was in the chat room. my daughter, Bryony, she regularly opens my wife's iPad, my wife's laptop, and touches the screen first and then kind of, and she realizes that she's not on the iPad because she used the iPad so much.
So am I like the only person that really doesn't like using an external keyboard with their tablet? I've never used an external keyboard with my iPad. I tried a couple times, and it just didn't work.
I think it's how the external keyboard presents itself. So if you're talking about the Logitech keyboard, I find that extremely functional. If you're talking about carrying around a Bluetooth keyboard in my backpack to then bother to start up, to then pair with the iPad, and it saps all the battery because I forget to switch it off and that kind of stuff, then no, I'd agree entirely with Jeff. It's not the user experience. Apple's Bluetooth keyboard user interface is not as much fun on the portability side of it. But if you were talking about Apple had a laptop, so I've got my MacBook Pro here, and actually it's got a touch-sensitive screen, and it's got my trackpad, and I can still put a Bluetooth mouse with it, and I've got the keyboard, and I've got the choices of interface where I can swipe and scroll using my fingers on the screen and then go back to the standard interface. I think that's the way forward. And Apple have got to respond to that, I would say, because I think that's where some of the interface Metro has given is beautiful.
Well, they put in patents for iMacs with touchscreens, which like lay flat virtually.
They looked so cool.
Yeah.
So it's probably something. They probably have looked at it. It's probably a model somewhere in Cupertino in some vault somewhere. It does. Because if you just want to literally swipe your finger up and down, that's a lot easier than pinpoint accuracy, because you've just got to get within the rough vicinity of a text box or just a swipe and... I don't think that's the same as...
So let's go back to Jeff's question and round robin. Who's happy using an iPad with a keyboard? Righty.
Oh, no way. Never.
Right. Carl?
I have done. Okay, I've adapted to both of them. I can type equally fast on the screen, but I don't write all day long. Like, that's Jeff's bread and butter, so I can imagine...
Yeah, good point. Mr. Wheatley?
Interestingly, I'm the exact opposite from you. I had the Logitech keyboard for my iPad, hated it, and now I carry around an Apple Bluetooth keyboard and I love it. I rarely, if ever, use the on-screen keyboard on the iPad. I just don't like it. I like that tactile feel of typing on a chiclet keyboard. I don't like using on-screen keyboards.
Okay. I'm not a great fan of the on-screen keyboard, I have to say, though. I love my Logitech one. And Rich?
I'm with Paul. I do it the same way. I only really do it that way if I'm actually doing any sort of serious lengthy typing. If it's just for a quick email or something, I'll use the on-screen keyboard. But if I'm blogging or writing something, then I'll use the keyboard.
Okay. So how does that sit with you, Jeff?
I think that sounds about right. We have a mix. People use their iPads in different ways. And I will continue to touch type on the on-screen keyboard on mine.
Can you do lengthy pieces like that, Jeff? Yeah,
I've written articles well over 1,000 words touch typing on my iPad keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy to sit and write a blog post on the iPad, but I wouldn't sit and do it on the screen on the on-screen keyboard. I'd do that on the Logitech.
Does anyone do?
I wouldn't do it on my iPad Mini. I can't even imagine doing it there.
No.
But on iPad Air and my third-gen iPad before that, all the time.
You know, just talking about keyboards, I really wish these things, like the Apple ones, were backlit. I got to say.
Yeah, I mean, you're screwed in terms of battery life then. No, that's the only downside.
Well, you can make them rechargeable. Plug a USB, charge it up for 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the Mojo thing, and that works really well for the desktop here. Definitely. Good pick. We got a good conversation out of that, mate. Nice story. Righty, what have you brought for us, mate?
Well, it was kind of something that I saw that came out this week, which is kind of leading on to something else. at the end of last year, I was kind of going on about the Moto G, which was the Motorola Google phone that came out of here. I think it's it's 120 quid SIM free, and I think you can get it for like 11 quid a month. But this month, this week, Google released a Google Play Edition, stock Android. It's only in America at the moment. But what it got me thinking about is, you know, and the reviews, it's won a lot of awards last year, being a really great low-priced Android phone. But it got me thinking, the price of kind of entry-level tech has come down a hell of a lot, because what you'd pay for a decent smartphone or a tablet, you know, if you paid 99 quid, you'd get a really crappy experience. But kind of what you get now is kind of the things like the Moto G, the Nexus 7, Chromebooks and things like that. The entry-level kind of thing for people who just want to go on the internet, do email, do Facebook and things like that. It's really an open market about how you can get in. The price point, you know, do people really need these kind of premium devices like iPads and iPhones and these 500 quid Android phones? You know, will people just gravitate towards things like, you know, Tesco Huddle was a really great example last year. People thought it might have been a failure, but they sold a hell of a lot of those, didn't they? Mm-hmm. I think they actually released a second version as well. So I think that they're actually fitting a hell of a lot of power and quality into really cheap, well, not cheap, affordable devices.
Well, I mean, Barry Collins, who's the ex-editor of PC Pro and a good pal of the Big Show, he swore by this. He had it for a demo unit, and he said it was one of the best phones he's ever had, and he would be quite happy to have this as his backup phone, no question.
But the fact is...
Once you get to that point where this sort of thing, you pick it up and you play with it for a bit and you find that it's more than acceptable, you then really start to question, you know, spending an extra £500 on something that, yes, might be slightly, it might be sort of higher quality finish and what have you, but 500 quid?
Oh. It's all right, Carl dropped off.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right, mate. 500 quid, sorry.
Yeah, I was just saying that 500 quid, that really, really makes you think twice about whether you need that other device, you know? And I mean, my Nexus 5 is maybe what is about half the price of the equivalent iPhone at the moment.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm really enjoying it, and it's really made me think, do I want to go back to spending that kind of money again?
Well, I bought the Nokia 1020, which is great, and I love it, and I've used the phone commercially and got away with it. But my wife's got the 825, and that was 260 quid, and it's got everything. It's functionally, it's brilliant. It hasn't got the same camera, but, you know, everything else is perfectly fine. And the 625 is even cheaper still. I think that's only 180. And that is phenomenal as a phone at the price. It's just unbelievable. Yeah. And the Nokia, you know, whoever you are, you've got to go and have a play and really try and understand the Nokia Windows Phone interface, because it is exceptionally good on the phone, really good. And even Jeff backs me up on that.
Yeah, but there you go. The thing about the Windows Phone, I had an elderly friend, shall we say, she was looking for a phone, and obviously she had kind of an old Nokia kind of thing, and she had a PC laptop, and I went and got her a Windows phone, and she said, well, how will I get on with this? But it had Internet Explorer logo. She knew that was the internet. She knew Outlook was email and things like that. People go into shops and they go, I recognize this straight away, and it's at a good price. And also with the things like the Moto G, people are going to go, I do Facebook, I might do a bit of Twitter, I'll do my email. And they'll go, well, that's 11 quid a month on contract. And people are going to snap that up straight away over an iPhone or a Galaxy S4, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because money's tight.
Yeah.
Too right.
I'm just thinking, this is, you know, obviously 2013 was kind of the wave of these kind of things happening, and this, you know, the Nexus 7, you know, kind of retina quality displays and things like that. As time goes on, is there going to be a market for, you know, 500 quid tablets, 500 quid phones? Because I don't think people are going to pay them, because
they're not. Your
phone's your thing in your pocket that you whip out and you quickly check your email and things like that. And fair enough, the cameras aren't great now, but in 2 or 3 years, they're going to be the par with what the iPhone 5S is now, and people are going to be happy with that. So I don't think the market that Apple and Samsung and some of the high end phones HTC are doing right now, they can sustain it at all. So they're going to have to come down at some point.
Well, Andy in the chat room saying he's got his 820 for 180 quid, great value for money, and it comes with a built in capacitive charge back. as well. So
that's a fantastic thing.
And it's you said about the screen. It's not Retina. I think that's a bit overhyped anyway. But the screen itself is scanning at 60 frames a second. So when you do that to get that slide to look smooth, it's got to be at 60 frames a second, and it's doing it easily. It's beautiful.
But how good does your Lumia look? I've seen the same model as you. It looks fantastic.
The 1020 is gorgeous, and the battery grip for it for the camera is brilliant, and the pictures that you shoot. I sent one to Alex because I said, just have a look at this and tell me what you think of this as an image. And he said, well, I've looked at it on my iPhone and I've zoomed in and it looks fine. What's the question? And I said, I shot that on my 1020 and I've just given it to a customer to make into a big poster. And he said, because I got caught on a bridge and we were let onto the bridge to take the pictures, and I'd only taken it was like, come now, do this, and I hadn't taken any of the lenses up with me. I got a 7200 lens on my camera. I couldn't go wide angle enough, and I thought, well, I'm stuck, so stuff it. I'll pull out the phone and see what I get, and I pulled it up, took a shot, and I sent it to the customer, and the customer was like, wow, that's brilliant, and that was before I could do DNG. So now I've got the ability to do DNG as well. I can correct for colour exposure, and the Lumia back upgrade is phenomenal for the pictures, absolutely phenomenal. So you get that clear and crystal clear picture that you've got, and you've got the full flexibility of having RAW, effectively. So,
yeah.
Can't beat it.
Because I was a standard that, obviously, with this kind of wave of devices coming, it's going to change, that the iPhone 5C was so expensive in the end. I think they've missed a trick there.
I think they have. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
Absolutely right. That needs to be 280 quid.
Oh, easily, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even if it was only a 4S.
Yeah.
Jeff, what have you got for us, man?
We've been doing so well.
Dude, there's something in your kitchen that's flashing here. Red.
I'm about to just totally ruin our serious thing here.
Okay.
So what I found this week, remote-controlled sperm.
Mine needs to be.
So there's a group of scientists that figured out how to create a system where you can remotely control sperm. And so what they did is they built this little they're like tiny little metal tubes that the sperm swim into. And then once they're in there, that they get clamped off. But the tubes are so lightweight that while the sperm are inside, they can still swim and move around. And then they use a system of magnetic fields to direct the sperm where they want them to go. They haven't figured out how to get them back out without destroying them yet, but that's the next step. So, yeah, remote control sperm.
Siemens appeal. I love what they call sperm bots.
Oh man, we got a show title.
You could turn them into games, couldn't they? You could put it on your app and like have little attack runs.
Attack runs. Oh beautiful.
God, that would be amazing. Strafing runs.
Terror defense.
Stay on target.
Yeah, it totally changes the whole concept of tower defense games.
But the thing that I like about this story, and I've got it here on the screen, the RC sperm cars. Look at that.
I reckon the doctors will race them.
Look at that sperm car go.
RC sperm cars.
RC sperm cars.
Well, that's a space hopper race at the Bass Change, then, isn't it?
Do they...
I want a condom.
Oh man! Now I know what those protrusions were on the top of the balls.
Yeah,
and that's not a euphemism for something else entirely. Yeah, absolutely no. Sperm bots. That's what we need. Thank you, Jeff. I'm not sure we got any discussion to go on that.
Yeah, I don't know how much more there is to say.
Most of us in our life have controlled the direction of sperm, but only for a short period.
But not with and not with this level of accuracy.
Yeah, this is what when you get an old sausage show. We need a girl on the show. Keep us. I can't repeat what Batman's just typed in the chat room. I don't know why, because I've sworn myself three times. Waiters, what you got for us, boy?
So this, as I said pre-show, is probably something that's a little bit more suited to the media show. But anyway, so I saw this headline earlier on today, and it got me quite excited. Apparently soon there'll be an app available that will allow you to stream, and it's a legal app, that will allow you to stream all 530 episodes of The Simpsons. It's been released by Fox, and I was really excited when I saw that headline.
And? But what's the drill down on that?
Yeah, sadly, it goes downhill from there. So basically what it is this app exists, or is going to exist soon, but it will only exist for people that are subscribed to, sorry, I've scrolled down the page, a specific deal in the States.
There's a catch, it does say on the story.
Yeah, I've lost the name of it. Now, anyway, the point is that, apparently only 50% of television providers in the States actually provide this, what's called FX now. Only 50% of television providers in the States get this. So I guess what I was wanting to talk about was, it's if anybody else frustrated by this thing, this idea, the HBO Go, all those kind of things that we want to watch in the UK, and we have to go through convoluted ways, whereas if they would just say to us, right, guys, it's going to be £5 a month, we would happily pay for the likes of HBO Go or the Simpsons app, maybe a couple of quid a month.
They're missing out on the money.
Been rolled into something in the States, and I find it so frustrating. Let me give me your money.
Well, to be fair, though, as well, Paul, the problem that they've got is more likely to do with the content creators, because HBO may not always be the creator. They may be the facilitator of the broadcast.
Sure, but if all these things are maybe potentially coming elsewhere, I know it's maybe a bit too much to ask, but this kind of stuff really frustrates me. We live in an internet world, and if I want to pay for content, I should be allowed to pay for content. I shouldn't be forced to go and torrent it, not that I do. But it just frustrates the hell out of me. It's the whole Game of Thrones thing that happened a while ago. And then this thing as well. I got that quite excited, and I thought, you know, some of the newer Simpsons is a bit rubbish, but I really liked sort of like the first five seasons. I could happily watch them over and over again. And I probably have most of them, to be fair, but having them on an app that I can easily stream to the TV, just if I've got 5 minutes or... You know, it's something that you could sit and watch while you're having the morning motion or something like that. But I can't. I've got to do it legally. I could just miss out.
There's certainly a moral to release everything everywhere all the time. I do understand the kind of idea of like, well, okay, if we've got a Tom Cruise movie, we can't release it globally at the same time and have Tom turn up to the London premiere, the LA premiere, the New York premiere, the Milan premiere, the Calcutta premiere, whatever. There is a certain element of, you know, your resource has to be staggered in order to achieve that. But I'll hold my hand up. I don't care. Going back a couple of years, we watched The Tudors. The wife and I were avid watchers, and we recorded it on Sky and we got it all down, and there was no Sky, catch up or anything like that at the time. And, I said, oh, the Tudors is starting again soon. And she said, oh, right, okay. And we looked, and bugger me if it hadn't started 2 weeks prior. So she's like, oh, shit, we missed the first two episodes. Where are we going to get those two episodes?
The problem is a lot of these channels are facilitators of the content. Yeah. They take their content to a channel, and it will say, okay, we will fund you this. And then if it, like, we can sell advertising on this, basically what they're saying. They don't give a crap if it's any good or not. As long as it sells advertising, that's their model. That's all they're doing. But the problem is, that's the way it's been done for the last, 50, 60 years? And that model is going to take a long time to change. What we need is the people who actually create the content, cut out the middleman, and go straight to something like Netflix, which is, again, another middleman, effectively. But what that would do is that would allow worldwide distribution, because they've obviously got it working, because Netflix works perfectly, 99.9% of the time.
There's a conversation in the chat room about Breaking Bad, and Breaking Bad, you were the one that told me that Breaking Bad was on Netflix within 2 hours of airing on the US channel.
Because they signed that contract directly with... I think they still signed it with... I don't remember what network Breaking Bad was in the States.
As soon as you told me that, I stopped getting Breaking Bad down through news groups so I could watch it. Uh-huh. And I got it straight off Netflix.
because it's available. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So you've got, like, Netflix are doing things like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, and slowly the model's starting to change, or at least they're putting the grain of, like, grain of thought in these companies, saying, oh, perhaps we could do that. We'll take our next big project, we'll take it to Netflix, and they'll commission two seasons, because they don't care. They don't care if it makes money on its first weekend or its first, like, few weekends. They don't care, because they know they're going to run it continuously. So all you need to do is get subscribers continuously coming in to see this content. And it doesn't have to be the first weekend or the second weekend. It could be 2 years down the line. They know they'll make their money back.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I think I'm with you on this, and I think the movie industry needs to move that way as well if they really want to tackle torrenting. Because I've been with having the Google phone and what have you, I'm now kind of conflicted about where to buy digital movies from, because I've got sort of iOS stuff, and I've got Mac, and then I've got the Google phone. And I honestly think if you got if you had somewhere where you could buy these things, and you could buy them at maybe half the price of what they're charging now, I think a lot of the piracy would go away. I mean, look at music. A lot of the music piracy's stopped now because they're charging much more reasonable prices, and things like Spotify make it much more reasonable as well.
But remember, Richard, when you say you buy the movies, you're not. You're buying the license to watch the movie.
Yeah.
So you've got to make sure you download it. If you leave it on a server somewhere and they lose their license to show that film, that's gone. You've lost it.
Yeah,
that happened to Greeny, didn't it? I appreciate that. It was, he sits under the show that it was a movie he'd taken ages to find, and he ended up losing it because he'd left it on the server.
Yeah, no, I tend to always download and then back up somewhere, even if I don't want to have it on my hard drive, sort of thing.
Wasn't there a lot of talk, I don't know how long ago it was, that they were going to release things kind of online or on DVD at the same point they were coming out in the cinema? Was that a thing that was...
They can't do that. They can't do that in the States because the cinema chains have such power. They'll say, okay, we just won't show your movie.
And that would really curtail the piracy, wouldn't it?
You're waiting for one movie to say, okay, fine, don't show a movie, we'll just purely go online with it.
One of the big features that movies have got, though, in terms of getting awards and in terms of marketability is weekend box office takings, first weekend box office takings, and that's... That is. I can see that that's still a huge marketing pull.
I don't see that you need to change the whole kind of cinema first, home later. That's fine. It's just when it actually comes out, make it a less ridiculous price and allow everyone to use it on the devices that they want to use it on.
But the whole industry, TV and movies, is based on milking the cow. As in, not all the milk comes out. Not all of the milk comes out on the pull of the first, first pull on the teat.
Mm.
And that's the point: is that they, you get it in the cinema, whoosh, you get it on the TV, whoosh, and you pull as much income as you can out from that process. And if you let it out everywhere all the time, first time day one, you lose that ability. Although, actually, the leap of faith would tell you that you perhaps make more money.
But look at,
that was a big experiment with the first Batman movie, like years ago, where it was Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
They released the videotape of the movie while it was playing in the theaters. And movie sales went up because of it.
Mm.
And I think that that's held true for other movies where the same thing has happened. And theaters, even knowing that they will make more money if there's simultaneous releases, are afraid to let it happen because they're so worried about the what if this one time it doesn't. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, can you imagine if you walked out of the cinema and you'd seen a movie that you were just blown away by, so I'll take, for example, for me, I went to see Gravity recently, and I walked out of that, and I was like, oh, I have to own that film when it comes out. It's awesome. If you could have walked out and somebody said, there's the Blu-ray of it, and it's at a special introductory price because you've just watched it. I think an awful lot of people would take that up, or here's the digital version.
But do you know why they won't do that? Because they think of us, the paying public, as thieving scum. Because they're going to say, "Oh, he's going to take the movie home, rip it, and sell it, give it to all his friends."
That's going to happen anyway.
We know this.
They cannot get around that fact.
Is that because you had your phone on, Rich?
What's that?
Is that because you had your phone on to record it?
Okay. See, the problem is they're trying to keep hold of the scarcity model in the internet age, and it doesn't work. All it takes is one print to get digitized and stuck somewhere, a server on the globe that connects to another server, and it's gone. For example, when Wolverine came out, the work print got out. I mean, there was only one print, but then it flooded the globe because you can't. Once it's out, it's gone.
And the thing is, there are places in the world where security is much more lax. People are much more easy to bribe. They can't control markets like that.
Basingstoke.
I think things are changing because if you look at the amount of films this year that just tanked during the summer, it would actually do the movies a greater service if they just were say, okay, this film's available globally today, like After Earth, for example. You can go and buy that. And all the people around the Earth who are Will Smith fans go, right, I'll download that for $5.99. And then they find out it's crap.
I think, I was going to say, I didn't mind After Earth. I thought it was quite good. But I've got 2 points to make. Number one, if you make crap movies, which Will Smith did for a period of time, with Hancock and something else. And I watched those and I was like, I am not going to pay good. I went to see Hancock on my 40th birthday. My wife took me. She paid for VIP seats and we sat there and we watched that shit on my birthday. And I thought, right, well, I'm sorry, that's the last time you're getting money out of me. And the other thing is, if you look at movies when they're released, the Wolverine is the perfect example because my MacBook Pro, I can buy Wolverine. No problem. Buy it. Yes, HD. Thank you very much. Here you go. There's the money. And I get Wolverine available. I then come on to the main machine, which has got an HDCP non-compliant screen, and it says, no, you're not playing it. I've just frigging bought it. This machine's mine. Yeah, but that's a non-HDCP compliant device. Therefore, we're not letting you play it at HD. We're letting you play at SD and no better. Bastards! I paid for it. I paid for it in HD. My license with Apple says I can watch it on 5 machines. I've got a perfectly good licensed Apple machine here. Just because my screen is an old screen, you can shove it up your ass, stopping me watching it. I feel passionate about that.
You know,
I might edit that bit.
Yeah. Well, we know the
problem is that we have all of these studios that don't trust us, and they go out of their way to make it difficult for honest people to stay honest. And we see it all the time. Like you couldn't watch a movie because they didn't like the type of screen you were going to use. And here I am in the United States, and I can't see the third season of Sherlock because the BBC has decided they're not going to release it on iTunes yet.
Mate, I can just save you that it's a pile of shit. The latest season of Sherlock is the worst piece of television crap I've ever seen. It's car crash television.
Well, I'm going to end up watching it anyhow, and I'm not waiting for BBC to release it on iTunes. I have it now, and I will watch it.
I have it now.
I have it now. And... But that's only because they have gone out of their way to
Jeff, make it I'm difficult. Editing your bit. I'll edit my bit by editing your bit.
Yeah, I know. Throw me under the bus. Thanks, pal.
I mean,
there's not much point talking about this if we're going to edit it all out, is there really?
Yeah. This week's show is just a 1 hour, 45 minute bleep. Plain and simple.
Best show ever.
Let's not get. But the only bit you can listen to is the bit on masturbation. Sherlock is car crash television. It was the worst piece of written shit I've ever seen in my entire life. I got 45 minutes through the episode, the third episode, and I said, Sharon, I am going to bed. I've had enough of this. It is crap. Don't bother. Don't waste, however, 6 hours of your life to watch that crap. I'll never get that back. Who haven't we done yet? Richard?
Yep.
Your story.
I was going to talk about it along, continued on the theme of ownership of movies and what have you. Google Play have introduced their movies and TV app on iOS, which I thought was quite interesting.
In the States?
No, UK, you can get it.
Really?
I've got it on my iPad right now.
Excellent.
At the minute, it appears to be that you can only stream it. I can't see the little pin to allow you to download to your device. But
no, you can't.
No, and it's only standard def apparently that you can stream.
Yeah, it doesn't look high def, but it's a start. You know, it might come. You can't buy movies from it. That would be, I think, against Apple's terms and conditions. But still. I think that's great because that now gives you your Google stuff in even more places and makes it more accessible.
Fantastic. I better get this episode out tomorrow because they're going to have sod all to talk about on the media show on Sunday.
Oh, no, we've got a full doc already and none of these subjects on there.
Oh, brilliant.
Is it just me or is anyone kind of a little bit surprised by that?
What?
That's appeared on... are being allowed through the Apple's...
Well, it's only a streaming... I mean, it's only a service, isn't it? I mean, they allow other media...
No different from Netflix.
Yeah, the only reason you can't buy through the app is because if Google had initiated that, they'd have to give 30% of every sale to Apple, which obviously they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Just like Amazon and Kindle.
Yeah, because the music app's already in iOS, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
True. Plus, I think they'd be nailed for monopolistic practices if they started doing that, and they're still like stinging from the ebooks thing.
Mm.
But what's made me kind of think about this is you know, Google's kind of invading Apple's space, if you like, with all of their services, but Apple isn't doing the same back, is it?
What would
Apple's
it do, though?
Focused in other areas. That's my assumption.
Apple's looking for the passes, isn't it? It's looking for the season passes on channels for Apple TV and things like that a little bit more.
Anybody buy them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hell. You look at the NFL pass and the NBL pass. I mean, the NBL application and passes is an enormous sale for Apple.
Oh, for sports?
Yeah. I have the NFL pass. And,
I thought you'd be talking about...
It must be about 140 quid a year I drop on that.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about TV shows. You don't even get a season pass for TV shows.
Oh, right, okay.
No, but what you'll find is you'll end up with channels. Sorry, Jeff.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Jeff.
I don't have a cable subscription. I cut my cord a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
And shows like Doctor Who. I wait for the season pass to come out, buy it immediately, and then within a few hours of an episode airing, then I get to watch it. For me, season passes are a great thing because it's a lot cheaper for me to buy a season pass to the shows that I want to watch than to have a cable subscription.
How are you getting that on your big TV?
How am I getting it on my big TV?
An Apple TV or
I use Apple TV.
Yeah. Okay.
Jeff, what do you have? Do you watch any live sport or can you not?
No, I don't. I'm not a sports fan, so much to my father's dismay, it breaks his heart every time the Broncos
play. It's not a sport thing. Every boy can say much to my father's dismay over something. It's got nothing to do with sports.
That's true. So I guess my dad should consider himself lucky that this is what he's disappointed about.
Yeah.
Kind of puts you at a disadvantage, don't you think, Jeff?
Well,
I'm exactly the same as you. I put my hands up and say I have no real interest in sport at all. I don't watch anything. But if
then
you,
why
if
are you such a skinny bastard?
Because I do it. I don't watch it.
Okay, yeah, there's that.
If you're in a big, if you're out with a load of blokes, it almost invariably turns to sport, and you just have to stand there and go, yeah, whatever.
I make shit up.
How about those bears?
I just make up lines, or the other thing that happens is a lot of times when I'm out with a group of guys and they start talking sports, their girlfriends are there. I go flirt with their girlfriends.
To play.
You just need the app that was on the IT Crowd, don't you? That was a ludicrous play.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that. Yeah.
From Arsenal last night, wasn't it?
That's brilliant. Yeah.
No, I've always enjoyed playing sports, but I don't talk much. I like me cricket, I have to say, though. I've got... Cook's got to go.
You don't talk, you tweet them.
I tweet them, I.
Yeah, you tweet your cricket.
Michael Carberry, fantastic bloke. My story was... Adobe has decided that for Creative Cloud, if you're a subscriber, you're going to get 3D printer support.
Ooh.
Now, this is quite interesting, I find, because actually what you've got here is a lot of people are not used to the CAD interface and that ability to specifically measure stuff and that kind of thing. They'll create something that's more artistically based, if you like, as a 3D object. And that's relatively easy to do in Photoshop. It's a lot easier interface than it is with certainly a CAD system. But they're going to give you support. So for anything that you create in the 3D space in Creative Cloud, here's the best bit. All you've got to do is hit Command P. And it brings up the printer in the printer queue as a serious printer, plain and simple.
Wow.
And then you just click one copy and your printer... providing you've got the driver, which shouldn't be a problem, we'll actually recognise that and we'll start printing your 3D item. And I think that's fantastic. I was given this article by Alex in the chat room, and he I think he's a proponent of this as well. And I think one of the things that he'll like about this is I don't know whether Alex is fond of CAD interfaces or not, but certainly it's not something I'm particularly good at. And the idea of being able to work in Photoshop and then print out, I think, is phenomenal. And I think that's actually possibly one of the bigger kind of hits for the 3D printer revolution, perhaps.
Definitely.
What was suggested a little while ago, though, is they're going to get so tied up in, like, you think video copyrights and things like that are like complicated. They're talking about, say you want to make a widget for something, because someone owns the copyright on that widget shape, they're not going to allow you to print it. They're going to take down the site that holds the information, for example, or prosecute them, or things like that. And it's going to be just the same as piracy.
Well, a lot of those things are actually CAD files, though, anyway. Now, whether you've got the ability to transfer from the 3D CAD space to the 3D Photoshop space, I think that might be a bigger program than's currently out there.
Am I not just going to end up with a pirate bay filled with, you know, Dyson parts and things like that? You know, just be...
Lego, yeah.
Because Dysons are print. Shit. can I make a 3D sperm car?
Sperm bot.
Yes, you can.
No, it's the car. I want the sperm car. I don't want the bot. I want the sperm car. And I want to know. I wonder if he's got a GPS.
Do you think Google are working on an autonomous driving sperm bot? It
steals your data. That takes your data as it drives by.
Doesn't want to know.
Where would you like to go? Ovum.
Click for cervix view.
Via cervix.
They're taking their mapping technology really seriously if they go that far.
If you've got a Dutch cap fitted, does that come up as a block on the route and you need to find an alternative route?
Find diversion.
Via tonsils.
Ways into that.
Do I have to block bleep that bit or not?
No.
Well, the ways...
No, the via tonsils bit.
You can't bleep that bit. You'd have no show left.
I think that's a huge leap forward. I think if you're not careful, that could be what takes over 3D printing. The graphical interface for 3D printers as opposed to the CAD interface is going to be huge. I know there are some epic 3D CAD programs out there, says Batwinch. There are, and I've seen them, but the problem is you've got to know the CAD system to get the 3D element to work. It's a bit more training than if you already know Photoshop. The 3D element in Photoshop is significantly easier, a lot easier. I can't read that out, Batwinch. I'm not going to. That's definitely leapable.
I'll give that a go. We've now got 3D printers at work now, which you can actually order what the hell you like on them. So maybe I'll give that a go.
Right. Well, tomorrow I want you to go and fill in a requisition chitty for sperm car. And see what comes back.
You know I'll do it, don't you?
Do it. I want to know. I want to see a tweet about 10 o'clock.
You'll see a chitty for sperm car at 10 o'clock. By 12 o'clock, I'll have it.
Are you going to do a Paulum's action figure? That's the question.
It's
No, dude, totally. You should get, we should have, you should get us action figures for the entire BTN team, mate.
For sale. Just me and you, Ewan, and there's not enough plastic in the world for that one.
For sale at the bash.
Right there. I will drop the link from my 3D printing at work into the chat room and people can put suggestions in.
Do it, chat room. Brace yourself.
What are you doing, Paul?
I know.
Batwinch has just sent that request to her engineering department, allegedly. They are going to do it, unquote.
Awesome. Right.
We want figurines available. I'm not suggesting we're going to have 200 of these available for sale at the bash, but if we could have, you know, one set on a table that everyone can look and touch.
I've dropped the link in.
Shove pins in. There we go. It's www.sys-consulting.co.uk/web/expertise_3D_printing.html. That is Paulum's 3D websiting system and 3D printing system, rather. Submit what you would like printed in 3D to Paul. On that number.
That 3D printer is just going to be spitting out.
And it will be at the bash.
You know, for some of the things that people might request, you'll have to buy me a couple of drinks first, but then we're okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they said they not enough people were using it, so here we go.
Why do we do the most inappropriate stuff just before the UK 2 ad? That's what I want to know. Every frigging week.
That's why they come back.
UK 2 support this shit. They really do look after us. All the crap that we push out. Mr. Wheatley, holy hell, that Christmas show was the most inappropriate thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And the fact that...
they haven't heard this week's show.
I haven't heard it this week. Next year, Paul, don't do a Christmas show. Just put Chiz 1 as a banner on the page and that'll be it. All right, no point. UK2 pick up all our hosting. They pick up every bit of bandwidth that we got, and we sap a lot of bandwidth. We go back to the days. I mean, we go way back. We go back to when bandwidth was really frigging expensive, and the UK2 picked it up, and it made a difference to us then hugely, and it still makes a difference because the amount of bandwidth that we sap, we get no income. If you'd like to donate, you can donate, but the amount that comes in donations doesn't cover the amount of bandwidth that we mop up. So please, support UK2. If you can, go to our website first, click on their logo, that takes you to their page with a tracking link, then that'll open in a new tab, come back and use the offer codes that are there. You'll save yourself a fortune, and you really will save yourself a lot of money by using UK2. And there's a couple of tweets this week that I've retweeted where people have said customer service at UK2 is second to none. It really is second to none. That's not us saying it because we're getting paid to say it or anything like that. It really is great service. You raise a ticket, you get a resolution. They're fantastic. Support them because they look after us. We go away without them. We haven't got the money to pay for the bandwidth otherwise. Right then, have we got a cool thing? Righty boy, start us off, boy.
Something that my boys at work were playing with today. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. AirDroid?
Go on.
Anything? AirDroid.
Tell us more.
It's an app that you put on your Android device and an app that you put on your PC or Mac. But it basically creates a bridge between your Android phone and your computer, and it basically mirrors your phone to your computer. So you can basically do everything on your computer that you would do on your phone. So you can send texts, transfer data. You can even access the camera on the phone, on your computer, transfer files, do screenshots. It's even got a Find Your Phone feature. If you've got an Android phone and you really want to kind of utilize it and have some of the kind of thing that iCloud kind of does on your, on iCloud.com, AirDroid 2 is a free app. If you go to AirDroid.com, you can actually do everything that you do on your phone on your computer. And we were playing around with it today. It's absolutely brilliant app. It's just a really good extension to your phone. So if you want to, if you're a developer and you want to drag applications from your computer that you developed onto the phone or back onto your computer or anything like that, it's just a, it's a kind of seamless link between your computer and your phone without any cables or anything, and absolutely free. So well worth a look.
And it's a version 2 and it's free.
Yeah, it's brilliant. We were playing with it today and you can literally kind of walk around the office with your phone, you know, point your camera at people, and it appears on your computer. So it's you know, it literally is seamless. And just, you know, I hadn't heard of version 1, but obviously version 2 is even better. And, yeah, go and get it.
Sax is agreeing with you. AirDroid is awesome, unquote. I expect a review, no doubt.
It's coming, mate. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I knew it would be. Brilliant choice, mate. Like that. Mr. Garrett, what have you got for us?
Well, considering everything that we've covered today, you should be concerned, but actually you don't need to be. What I have for you today is Box. It's a service like Dropbox, and it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
But what makes it, I think, a cool thing right now is that they just updated all their apps. So if you go and download their mobile apps, they're giving you 50... oh, crap, how much is it?
50 gig.
Thank you. 50 gig of free storage for life.
Wow, that's really good. I pay 100 quid for Dropbox for 100 gig each year. But the other thing that you get with Box, which is pretty cool, is there's an awful lot of corporate systems don't mind Box.
No.
They get really pissed off at Dropbox, but they don't mind Box so much. So Box.com, excellent choice. Well done. Good pick. Like that one. Wheaters, what have you got for us?
So I have a website. On Friday night, I just came across this. Now, this may be something that people have come across before, but it's called The Best of Craigslist. And I tweeted out a few things from this on Friday night, and I lost a good few hours on Friday night just going through this. I'm not going to read any of them out, but some of the headlines on here, you have to spend some time on here. Need to borrow rent live ducks. Did you leave your prosthetic leg on the bus this morning? Extra large cow flavored dog bed, 2 dozen free goats, and it goes on and on. It's well worth a good couple hours of. It's probably even well worth 10 minutes of just flicking through them. Some of them are hilarious.
I've just gone. I've just gone to the page. Belly button lint, 3 jars of.
Yes, 2 unicorns for sale must go together.
1984 to 1993, 1994 to 2000, and 2001 to current.
Yep.
It goes right from just wildly bizarre to hilarious. There's some great stuff in there. And it's well worth spending 10 minutes just flicking through. And it's the kind of thing that if you start, you'll just keep clicking on the next one and then the next one and so on.
Ewan, is that Belly Five got a certificate of authenticity, though?
No, no. Good point. Good point. That you could be getting fleeced. Oh, thank you, 1853. Richie boy, what you got for us, mate?
Have you done a game called Star Command in the past?
No.
Oh, prepare to lose hours of your life.
It's what an awesome game.
If you play it, it's awesome. It's iOS and Android as well. And it's basically you are placed as a sort of starship commander.
It's a 1980s RP role player game, no?
It's like, you know, it sort of. I'll hold that up to the camera if you can see. That's just an example of the graphics a little bit.
I've got the web page up at the moment.
It is fantastic. The game has a great sense of humour. It's an interesting story. that goes throughout it. My only slight criticism is it's not the longest game in the world, but it is just damn good fun. And you go through, you get different types of missions. Sometimes there's ship-to-ship battles, which are great fun when you're doing them. And to fire your weapons, you have little mini games to actually let you fire your weapon and things like that. It's just go play it. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
There we go. Pick, mate. I guess.
You have purchases.
No,
there isn't, which is the other marvellous thing about it. I got it for 60p when I bought it.
Well done. And last but by no means least, Mr. Madden.
Right. Okay, so as you know, I'm a big Plex user. So this is for an Apple TV, unfortunately. I'm not sure if there's a Windows version, but maybe. But anyway, I'm going to go with Plexify, which Adam Christensen mentioned the other week as well. And what Plexify does is it makes it easy for you to repurpose the trailers icon on your Apple TV and turn it into a Plex player.
Now, you said you were having trouble with this, didn't you, the other day?
Yeah, because I didn't read the last screen on the instructions. I'd done my usual blokey thing, just rushed through.
Monday night, you were cussing and swearing, and now it's your pick.
No, I never did. So what you do, all it does is a Plexify, you download Plexify, which is a tiny little app, and there's no actually set page for it. You just type in Plexify, and you'll find it on the Plex forums. Install this. Yeah. Just follow the, I think it's about 10 different steps. It starts off by telling you to set your Apple TV to a certain DNS address, and then it goes through, and then it pulls down the latest version of Plex Connect from the GitHub servers, and then it tells you the one final bit at the end to point your profile settings and your Apple TV. It tells you how to get to them, profile settings, to this specific address. Then it uploads the certificate, so it can trick the box into thinking, it's a secure service, which it is. And then that's it. From that point on, it will automatically find your Plex server if it's running, and you just stream movies from your Plex server to your Apple TV brilliantly. It works 5.1, everything works, and it does all the work for you. It auto updates. They say it's going to auto update. The guy's continuously upgrading it and fixing it, and it's getting better and better with each iteration. It's fantastic.
Do you have to plug your Apple TV into your computer to do this, or is it?
It's all done over the network.
Mm. Oh, God, I want this so bad. Yep, I'm getting that right now.
As endorsed by Will Green as well.
Well, yeah.
No.
So if you were using a service on your Apple TV to perhaps get an American version of Netflix, just for argument's sake, if you're changing...
Right, okay, so you mean something like US Block or Unblock Us or whatever?
I'm not familiar with the different services, so I can't possibly comment. But
no, they're not illegal. They're VPN services. They're not. You can do whatever you want with them.
Wheatley, you absolute frigging pussy. You're sitting somewhere else on the plane going to Macworld. I am not sitting next to you, you pussy.
Okay,
if you're having to change your DNS servers for Plexify, do you happen to know if these two services play nice together?
So what happens, what Plex Connect does is it puts a file system on the same Mac as you're running your Plex. And all you have to do is go in and open up the services file, I think it is. And you just change, because I think by default it puts the Google one on 8.8.8. Just change that to the one that US Unblock is telling you to use, and it should work.
Right. Okay. Fine. Not that I do that.
I do.
Yeah, you're not trying to get in the States in 3 months.
Yes, I steal American programs regularly. Absolutely.
Yeah, they'll let you in. Just let them fill you up. But it's what works for me. It's how I get to travel around this country.
I'm actually looking forward to my cavity search.
Yes, I will wear a kilt. It makes it far easier.
I'm looking forward even more to Paul's.
Suddenly I'm feeling really sorry for TSA agents for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, mate, you'd lose a hand.
Send in the sperm bot.
No, I draw the line at that. My pick is Lumia Black. Lumia Black is an upgrade. If you've got certain types of phones, I think the 925 is capable, the 820 is capable, the 1020 is capable at the moment, the 625 isn't. You'll have to wait for it. and the 1520 is capable. But Lumia Black is an upgrade for your Windows phone, and it gives you the ability, amongst other things, to shoot RAW if you've got the right camera. This is my 1020, and my 1020 now shoots DNG files. They come out, they're 34 megapixels, and they alter just like any other DNG file would come out of Adobe GNG Converter. I've sent it the image to Alex and asked him to have a look at it, and he said, no, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And I've sold one of the photos to a customer and said, what do you think? I'll come clean, so I'm not saying anything I shouldn't. But Adobe Lumia, not Adobe, Christ. Lumia Black, Nokia Lumia Black upgrade for your phone. Well worth getting. Don't hesitate. Whilst we've been on, hot off the press, we also have a Twitter update for one of the subjects that we talked about last week. This is from @Kambuntu on Twitter, who is listening to The Big Show as I speak, and he's writing back with venom correcting me. Hey, Ewan, listening to The Big Show, and as an airline pilot, I have to correct you on a few things. There are no aircraft that can do automatic takeoffs. They're all done by the pilot. 99% of all landings are manually done by the pilot as well. And auto land is a rare and big deal. We have to watch it like a hawk, as it does make a lot of mistakes. Automation is far from perfect, and we have to often turn it off. Thanks, Cam. Hence the reason that most aircraft crashes are human error. There we go. No word on tea and biscuits, though. Where can we get a hold of you, Righty?
Well, you get me on Twitter at Paulum's in about 10 minutes, putting the kettle on and opening a packet of rich tea.
Well, hey, the wife's in for a good night.
Yes.
If she's still awake.
Well.
Jeffrey, where are you, sir?
I'm at MacObserver.com and at, like, half the shows here and Apple Context Machine, we have Communicators, and Fresh Brew Tales, where I talk about the ridiculous things I see in coffee shops.
Good man. At Dr. Proc, where are you?
That's...
Daisy, he responded! He responds to it already! You, dude, you totally have to register at Dr. Proc on, on Twitter. Did you come up with a body part that rhymes with Gloucester for us?
No, I told you I wasn't going to.
Any body part. I expect a tweet off you in the next 7 days of any body part that rhymes with Gloucester.
I'll have a think. I bet you
ask your colleagues.
So it's at Rich Harkness on Twitter or me blog, areyougettinghit.co.uk.
But after next week, it'll be at Doc Proc.
It's taken.
Is it?
Dr. Proc is taken.
No, it's Dr. Procto. That's what we want. Dr. Procto went to body part that rhymes with Gloucester.
Dr. Procto's taken as well.
No! Oh.
Don't go to that website. Wow. Don't go to that Twitter handle.
Oh, no, shit.
You want the real Dr. Procto.
Dr. _ Procto, then.
Yeah.
Went to Gloucester. Paul, where are you?
You can get me at Paul Wheatley on Twitter or on the Gamer Show on this network.
Good man. Fine show that is as well. And?
Yes. I would highly recommend the Christmas quiz, albeit the sound issues are not there. It's definitely one of our riskier ones.
Yeah, but also, haven't we got an announcement of up and coming tractions?
Yeah, I would like to. I didn't want to jump in there on the off chance that it's not approved by the board.
No, no.
The pilot.
It's already happening, mate. I mean, we peddle this shit.
So on Monday, so hopefully it'll be released kind of Tuesday, Wednesday time. It's a new show. It's called The Pocket Show. And basically, we're just going to talk about mobiles and tablets. And on the first show, we've got a couple of guests and that we're really looking forward to chatting to. And we've also got Ewan and Carl. Now, we've got James, formerly of Big Show fame, James Hart, and Sam from The Gamer Show, and Carl and Ewan. We're going to be chatting. Everything Windows, iOS, and Android. It should be good.
Sam, the wannabe Scotsman.
Yo, don't say that.
He already hates me. Why do I care? As for his girlfriend, holy shit.
Tiny temper.
And last but by no means least, Minecraft Carl.
You hold me on Twitter at Clause0101 or on the Media Show or on the Mac and Fall Show, which is currently number 7 in the top tech podcast on iTunes.
For new subscribers. Good
for
man.
New subscribers.
Good man. Well done. I'm Ian Rankin. You get me at Ian Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again tomorrow. We've got the Mac Show. Christ knows who's on it because I lost that bit of paper as well. See you then. And I'm going to Macworld. Did I say? Don't know. See you next week. Au revoir.
So you and we get to have a drink together at Macworld.
Well, apparently we're staying round the corner from a brewery.
You'll never get there.
Yeah. We're one block from a brewery and two blocks from Macworld, which that may be a block too far. It has to be said.
It may very well be. which brewery do you come from?
Oh, hang on. Which brewery?
Because I didn't realize there was a brewery that was that close, and I spent a lot of time down in that area.
21st Amendment Brewery.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that close. Awesome. Yeah,
we are right around the corner from 21st Amendment Brewery and a long, long way from the Moscone Center, but two blocks.
Well, they are kind of long blocks, but the great thing is that... The buildings come right up to the edge of the sidewalk, so you can just lean your way all the way down.
Well, Paul and I will be bringing some rugby tour games with us. So,
excellent.
Whether those are an education or not remains to be seen. Carl started drinking.
Jeff, when are you flying in?
I don't know exactly which day I'm flying in yet. I will be.
I haven't stopped recording yet. So anyway, we'll see you next week.